Now, another BloomerBoomer.com podcast. Your host, Andy Asher, living life over 55. Do you remember when?
Do you remember when?
Do you remember when?
Thank you very much. It's a privilege and an honor to be in the white intellectual ghetto of the West. We wanted to do a couple of things before we started. The first is that based on the fact that SNCC, through the articulation of its program by its chairman, has been able to win elections in Georgia, Alabama, Maryland, and by our appearance here will win an election in California, 1968, I'm going to run for President of the United States.
Stokely Carmichael died November of 1998, a black activist in the 1960s American Civil Rights Movement, growing up in the United States from the age of 11, graduating from Howard University, rising to prominence in the Civil Rights and Black Power Movement, first as a leader of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, otherwise known as SNCC, and later as the honorary Prime Minister of the Black Panther Party. Well, aside from the world's most seasoned travelers, you'd have to be practically inhuman not to suffer some form of travel anxiety. With that, and that travel is one of the greatest dreams among baby boomers, we thought it might be helpful to talk about travel anxiety with not only a veteran foreign traveler, but someone who suffers from extreme anxiety disorders. Her name is Rita Anya Nara, suffering from panic disorder, seasonal affective disorder, and social anxiety disorder. And when she started traveling and wrote her book, The Anxious Traveler, from her own experiences, she hopes to inspire those too afraid to travel to manage their fear while having an incredible life experience. Rita, thanks for taking the time. So where does one begin?
Well, I found out that at the root of a lot of anxiety is uncertainty, and when you gather the facts beforehand, you take away that level of unknown and you make yourself comfortable, and you can get back to thinking about actually enjoying your trip, you know, enjoying your vacation.
I guess the fear of the unknown is what causes all out of that. So if you can get those answers, then that fear is reduced.
Absolutely, and you know, there's many things people worry about when they travel. I mean, if you're going abroad, you're concerned about culture shock and crime and different social attitudes, you know, depending on who you are and what you believe. And so it's a different ball game, but you know, so many people are confronting those fears. They're learning that, you know, when we do go abroad or when we do travel, we're treated as a guest, and we have people who help us, who are paid to help us, and we have to remember that.
Well, that's true. Now, you know, one thing I feel about fear, and I'm sure other people have a different outlook on it, but a lot of fear is misplaced, and a lot of fear is real. Maybe you can talk a little bit about what some of those are, because you know, unless someone does an awful lot of traveling, there's probably some unnecessary fear, and then there are probably some things that someone should be concerned about.
Yeah, and definitely crime is one thing that you know, people need to think about as much as possible before they go to a particular city. And you know, I haven't been to a city in the world, Andy, where there's not a good area and a bad area. And just, you know, it's part of human life. And you know, in some areas you're putting your safety at risk if you take a nice stroll down the road to the restaurant, and in other areas you're perfectly fine. And you know, you can go to sites like WikiTravel and look at some popular guidebooks who are very honest about where you should go and where you shouldn't. And of course, that's a big factor if you're traveling independently. But even if you're on a tour and you do like a port of call, or you go out for a few hours on your own, it's important not to let your guard down and let someone take advantage of you or victimize you, because that's when you can have a real spiral of fear and worry. If you've been had an unfortunate incident, then you become more afraid to travel. So learning how to balance having a good time but also being on guard and looking out for your personal safety is really important.
Now, what countries are we talking about? Is this throughout the world? Is it the same concern in Western Europe or everywhere? Or do we need to narrow that down?
Well, certainly in first world countries, you're going to be safe, right? I don't, you know, back away from making a broad statement like that. But in places like the Middle East, or certain areas of South America, you certainly need to be more careful and get as much information as possible about the types of scams that are played. And there's all sorts of different scams. People will be very obvious and just, you know, try to rob you outright or play games, and then you realize 2 hours later that, you know, your belongings are gone, or you've been, you know, led to a place where you're going to have a hard time getting out safely. So, there's certainly differences around the world and places where you're going to be safer. And probably, in my experience, the safest places to go are like Northern Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Canada. Just in general, those seem to be the places where people feel the most comfortable.
So you mentioned scams. What are some of the ones that might not be as obvious that someone could get caught up in?
Well, there's one that someone I was on a cruise with suffered through. He was in Buenos Aires before we got on a cruise for Antarctica, and he was a victim of what was called a mustard scam. And he was passing by a hot dog stand in Buenos Aires, and the actual guy running the stand feigned a mistake or tripping or mishandling his food and got mustard on the guy's shirt, on his shirt pocket, and then was apologizing profusely. And, you know, the tourist, he wasn't mad. He was just like, oh, geez, you know what happens. And so the owner of the hot dog stand was cleaning him off, and while his assistant was cleaning out his wallet, his back pocket. So, you know, he had a clean shirt leaving, but he didn't even know that he'd been ripped off until almost before he got on the cruise.
Appropriately named the mustard scam.
Yeah. Another one that is just starting to become popular is you'll ask you know, a hotel to dial up a taxi for you, and then a taxi van comes along, and you think, okay, well, this is the standard taxi, and you get in, and then when you get off at the airport, the cost is three times that of a normal taxi because it's a van and it's more expensive, but you just wanted a little old taxi, and here you have to pay for the van ride.
Yeah, so someone then needs to do a little research on what to be beware of. Where might they go for that?
I have found WikiTravel, the derivative of Wikipedia, but especially for travel, to be a tremendous source of information. All the little local and regional con artist scams, they really keep up-to-date information. To me, it's even better to go to those sites than to buy a book, because they're always updating that information on, you know, crime. We know that criminals evolve, and certainly Wikipedia has their thumb on the pulse of the latest scams out there.
Now, these types of stories are enough to bring enough fear for someone to not travel to that destination at all. Is that overreacting?
It can be if the loss is significant enough, and if you're traveling alone. And, you know, I go back to, you know, the man I talked about that was the victim of the mustard scam, and you know, he was so upset getting on this cruise from Buenos Aires, and it did take him days to get over that. But you know, eventually he was able to put it in perspective and enjoy the rest of his trip. And, you know, in the end, it's just money. It's a feeling that you've been duped for sure. But, you know, certainly the chance of a physical crime or assault is much, much lower than something like, you know, a con artist scam.
So yeah, so your personal safety is not as much at risk as some of these other forms of crime.
It's not as much as we're led to believe, and you know, I've been through 38 countries all by myself. I'm a 36-year-old female with no great special physical powers, and you know, I've have my own little tricks for, you know, personal safety, such as, you know, not walking too close to buildings or parked cars where I could be grabbed, and certainly staying the heck off the streets after dark, and just staying as close as possible to other people, you know, even if I do want to go out and explore on my own, but making that compromise to look out for my safety, and I haven't had any trouble.
Now, what are some of the countries that you've traveled to where you'd be particularly on guard?
Well, Morocco was one where I stuck out because, you know, I was because I'm not Muslim, but I did dress in the local women's clothing, and that helped me attract less attention. And really, it becomes a lot too of attracting as little attention as you can, and just acting like you have somewhere to go is one big thing. Like you're on a mission, not like you're, you know, wandering around, and that can be hard to do because when we're tourists, we want to be able to amble around and just look around, and you can learn to do that without, you know, looking like you're lost or confused or like, you know, you're ripe to be engaged by, you know, someone who's up to no good.
Well, now, lots of people would rather travel in the way you're describing rather than an organized tour. However, perhaps that's a safer way to go?
You know, I found out that people on organized tours, they sometimes let their guard down a little too much when they do go on excursions. So it really depends on, you know, how easily you're distracted. And if you feel like if you're going to go out on your own, you're just going to be, you know, too easily preyed upon, then certainly, you know, a tour group is the way to go. And I mean, you know, it's common sense to understand that there's safety in numbers, but we also have to keep in mind that, you know, tour groups are a bigger target. So, like, if you want to travel to the Middle East and the feelings towards Americans or Westerners there are not very positive, then a tour group is kind of a big target, and you might actually feel more comfortable kind of blending in more and exploring on your own.
You know, you bring a personal story of that we really should touch on, is that you admit to anxieties, and I guess you've even used the anxiety disorders. So tell us a little bit about how you decided to be a tour expert and in light of those types of anxieties and how you've overcome them.
Yes, I do have panic disorder, Andy, and I noticed it was getting very, very bad in my mid-20s because I was avoiding the things that most scared me, and I was terrified of a lot of social interactions that I really wasn't trying anything new. I was staying at home. I was indulging my curiosity in the world by, you know, sitting in front of the Travel Channel for 5 or 6 hours a day and on the weekends and, you know, cutting pictures out of National Geographic. And, you know, it got to the point where my inability to manage my panic disorder was affecting my job and my overall physical health. And my doctor knew that I didn't like going to behavioral therapy. So he said, well, why don't you try confronting your fears in the real world by doing something that you love? And I ended up taking a trip to Vancouver, and what was so great about travel as a form of therapy, if you will, is that I was confronting the things that I most feared without thinking about them beforehand, because when you're traveling, you're so much in the moment, you just don't know what will happen a lot of the times, and so you can come across something that would has terrified for you for years, but you have to think on your feet, and you end up coming out of it. I mean, you might be pretty freaked out after the incident, but you learn from it, and you understand that, hey, that it wasn't so bad. I lived through it, and this is what I can do the next time.
That's good advice. Now, in terms of people over 55, I don't know if fear would be the right word, but there are concerns that you have in terms of health and medication, and anything that you can share on that regard?
Yeah, absolutely. When people go to a different environment, which is almost always the case with travel, they should learn what kind of physical and environmental challenges that they're going to encounter. And one big thing is possible allergies. And I'll go back to an example from this cruise I took to Antarctica, and there was a lady down my hall who had been absolutely miserable in Buenos Aires because she was from Canada, and you know, she was surrounded by, you know, South American plants and grasses for days, and something just made her miserably sick, and she didn't know what it was. And I think if she'd done some research before she left to learn about the local plant life, she could have gone to her doctor for, you know, a certain antihistamine that would have saved her a lot of misery.
Now, there was a time, and it's been a while since I've done a lot of international travel, but there was a time when before you went anywhere, you were required to get certain shots, inoculations. Is that still the case?
That is still absolutely the case. Yeah, I got 5 shots at once on the same day and then lived to tell about it. But yeah, those inoculations are still very much a part of travel.
So that is at least one safeguard. And, you know, the other, you know, the fear of flying has always been the most well-known, and I suppose there's no way around that one. Either you just face your fear or you don't go anywhere.
Well, yeah, flying still remains the safest way to travel. And there was an incident this summer with the Asiana Airlines crashing at San Francisco International, and people see that on the news and they go, oh my God, I'm never getting on a plane again. But every time there is an incident like that, the airlines, they go back and they review their mechanical performance of the planes, the training records of their pilots. They almost overreact to make sure that something like that never, ever happens again. So what I tell people and what I remind myself of when I fly, and I'm getting on a flight to Turkey tomorrow, is that we become safer than ever every time there's an incident, because people learn from it and they put those extra safety measures in place that weren't even there before.
Yeah. Now, if someone is traveling to some of the countries you mentioned earlier, Northern Europe, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, I believe. Would you just pretty much use the same precautions as you would in the U.S.?
Yeah, I think so. And I actually think those countries are safer than the U.S. in many ways. And, you know, I have traveled with a companion who is 74. And one thing that she has encountered, though, is the lack of access to upper and lower levels. Like, there won't be elevators and escalators. So, or if there are, then they're clearly on the other side of the airport or the train station. And so, and this is even in some of the richest countries in the world, you know, that in Northern Europe, Norway, Sweden, Finland. And so, in cases like that where there's limited access and you're dragging a ton of bags, we've actually just gone to the nearest service person and say, hey, look, can you give us a ride in your cart to the nearest elevator or escalator because we're just not dealing with this? And, you know, they speak English, they're happy to help, and, you know, my travel companion didn't end up having to, you know, ask me, if you will, if, you know, I'll carry her bags up two flights of stairs.
Yeah, now there's also the question of travel insurance, because you may not get the kind of coverage that if something happens to you. How do you feel about having travel insurance?
I think it's essential because Medicare almost certainly is not covered when you go abroad. You're not going to get the coverage that you would here. You're not going to get a whole lot of coverage at all, and so I know that was a shock for my travel companion, and so when we learned that, we put her doctor through a lot of hoops of asking what kind of travel insurance to get, and they weren't sure, so they went through the HMO, and we eventually got the answers that we wanted and were hoping for, but it took a few weeks, so very far.
Well, as we wind down the time that we wanted to spend on this, something I always like to do is just ask if you might have a few tips, tips on how someone, a baby boomer who wants to do some traveling and wants to see some places that are new, what might be some of the tips that they should do?
Well, they should definitely understand how long they want to go for and put a lot of thought into that because, if you think you're going to get burned out or you think you're going to get rushed along, that can make a huge difference in your comfort level. So most good tour books will recommend a set number of days where you want to spend a certain place, and that it's really important to to note that information because I've traveled with people who think that 8 days in Paris isn't enough, but after 3 days they're bored and they want to move on. So considering that and also whether they want to take a car or take the train wherever they're going is another big thing to think about, especially in Europe. I know people that are very worried about train safety right now because it remains a security problem, and I've known people that have been very comfortable just renting a car in Europe, and yeah, they're paying quite a bit for fuel, but they're having a dream trip, and they're not having those security concerns, and they're more independent, and they're not dealing with dragging luggage from car to car as they're trying to find the right seat. And another thing, I guess, is understanding the physical challenges, not just problems with accessibility, but acclimatization is a huge factor. And when you're going to a place that's, 20, 30 degrees warmer, you might be really looking forward to sitting in the sun and not thinking so much about what it's going to do to your energy level. As we get older, we become more vulnerable to sunburn. And also, air quality is another big thing. We get these beautiful pictures in travel magazines where the photographer has actually gone in and photoshopped the sky. And the sky is normally a bit brown, and so when people go to really big cities, particularly in Asia, they're shocked because they can barely see the skyline. And air quality can be a huge factor. You can arrive somewhere and suffer from some mild asthma, even though you have no problem at home. So you want to talk to your doctor about any sensitivity you've had to air quality in the past and what you might expect. Go to a site like weather.com or worldallergy.org. Both of those are excellent for telling you what kind of environmental factors you can anticipate. And finally, just trying to enjoy it all. Just doing as much planning as you can, but not over-planning so that you feel like you're part of an obstacle course. And, you know, and keeping the right mindset, because the world's not perfect right now. You know, the price of fuel is going up. There's regional wars going on, but I don't think it's going to get any better. So the average person can still afford a good plane ticket. If you've done well and worked hard your whole life, you can still afford that first-class ticket to go wherever you want. And, you know, it's all waiting for you. And like I said, my favorite travel companion in the world, she's 74 years old. She's still amazed at what she can see and do. And she's so happy, too, that, you know, she can bring along her video camera, take her iPhone, and have that experience, you know, and have all those conveniences on top of everything that she's always wanted to see and waited for so many decades to have the money and time to see these places.
Any great secret destinations you can tell us about?
Yes. Go to Antarctica. You will not regret it. It's an amazing experience. I got there and back for $5,000. I met so many amazing people. There were so many different things combined on the cruise, getting to see all the spectacular scenery, the wildlife, but having the 11-deck ship to explore and all the conveniences and going back to a great stateroom that's kept nicely heated in the evenings. It's a trip of a lifetime, and I made so many friends there, baby boomers that thought, wow, this was worth waiting for, and that they're going again.
Wow, that's great. And just, I guess, one other thing. Do you want to tell us anything about The Anxious Traveler?
Yeah, The Anxious Traveler is available on Amazon.com, and it's a 250-page guidebook of how to plan your trip A to Z if you have trouble managing stress, or you just don't know what to expect, or you haven't traveled in a while. It's got information on the latest technology applications that can help make your travel easier, and also information on other cultures, what to expect. And, you know, obviously I recommend it. It's not a book about me. It's truly a guidebook to help someone plan a successful trip.
Well, thank you so much, Rita. That was really very interesting.
Thanks so much for having me, Andy.
Thank you for listening to this BloomerBoomer.com podcast. We provide transcripts for most of our podcasts. You can click on the transcript section of the website. You can also access all of our podcasts on iTunes. Finally, we would love it if you could leave a comment, good, bad, or indifferent, in the reply section of the podcast. Thanks again.